Dr. Clayman's an assistant professor in the Division of General Internal Medicine and a member of the Robert H. Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center of Northwestern University. She received both her MPH and PhD from the Johns Hopkins University School of Public Health. Prior to joining the faculty at Northwestern, she was a cancer prevention fellow at the National Cancer Institute. Thank you, Marla. Thanks. So I'm going to be talking today about patient-provider communication about chemotherapy-induced side effects. So, and I have nothing to disclose. So when we think about chemotherapy-induced side effects, there are several of them that most people, even in the general public, are pretty aware of. So one that people find particularly distressing often is nausea and vomiting. In addition, there's fatigue. There's often other gastrointestinal symptoms like diarrhea and constipation, as well as lack of appetite. Many people are familiar with hair loss, neuropathy, so some nerve problems, particularly around the fingers and the feet, as well as infection can be a problem. So these backgrounds often interfere with a patient's ability to carry out normal and everyday activities, and they can lead to impaired quality of life, particularly when they are not managed well. And so CINV, which is chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting, are among the most distressing side effects as reported by patients. So for example, in a study of over 500 patients that were undergoing chemo for advanced cancer, CINV was endorsed as one of the most important symptoms that was experienced by cancer patients. In addition, and part of what the rationale was for this study to begin with, is that CINV, they are often classified into three primary categories based at the time of onset. So one, which is anticipatory, which occurs prior to chemo infusion. So this is for those of you who are thinking about sort of a Pavlovian sort of response. If someone has had chemo and they had a bad experience, then before they even have their next chemo, just thinking about it makes them feel nauseated and anxious. The acute occurs during or within 24 hours of chemo infusion, and that is generally something that has been a little bit more well anticipated and controlled in clinical settings over the past several years. But then there's also delayed CINV, which occurs at least 24 hours after chemo infusion. So somebody might get their chemo on a Monday, but not have the nausea and vomiting until, say, Thursday. And so from a perspective of trying to look at patient-provider communication around these issues, if somebody is not aware that this is something that could happen later on and that they're not thinking about what strategies they might use to minimize this or to handle it, then that's something that we're particularly interested in. So our aim for this project was to code medical visits for communication patterns among patients, physicians, and nurses with respect to chemo-induced side effects, particularly CINV. What I'm going to present today is really what we looked at specifically having to do with the oncologist visits, but if people are interested, I can follow up and talk with you about what we also have from the nurse visits, as well as some patient-reported outcomes and symptom diaries. So our recruitment took place across five clinics across the country, so MD Anderson, Northwestern, a local community-based practice, as well as something called the West Clinic, which is in Tennessee, and California Cancer Care. For the provider eligibility criteria, we wanted to record visits with providers who had at least 5 years of experience treating patients with moderately or highly emetogenic regimen, emetogenic meaning nausea inducing. The patients had to be at least 18, diagnosed with lung, breast, or colon cancer or lymphoma at any stage, receiving moderately to highly emetogenic chemo, and that these had to be patients who were beginning their first line of chemotherapy. So these were people who, at the time that we were recording these visits, were naive to chemotherapy. They had to be able to read and understand English and provide informed consent. So what we had two coders working independently, and then they coded these audio recordings for chemotherapy-induced side effects, including CINV, fatigue, appetite, all of the things that I mentioned before, as well as specifically looking at management strategies for the side effects. So not just you might experience this, but what might you do in case it happens. And we found that we had an inter-rater reliability using kappa of, depending on the specific code, anywhere from 0.66 up to 0.91. So we had a sample of 36 patients overall, although what you're going to see is on a slightly smaller number of patients, but there's not really any significant differences between the populations. So in general, they were, as you would expect for cancer patients, the mean age was 57. 70% were female. That's because in part we had breast cancer as one of our cancer types. 69% white. About a third of them were working full or part-time. And then in terms of diagnosis-related information, we had a lot of colorectal cancer patients, and 61% had a stage 3 diagnosis, so that is moderately advanced for each of these cancers. So when we look only at these oncologist visits, so like I said, what we did for these was what we tried to do was to record their first oncologist visit, as well as if they then met with a nurse educator afterward, that we also audio recorded the nurse visits, and then if we could, we also tried to get their second visit with the oncologist. So these ones that say before chemo are these first visits with the oncologist where they're learning about what their cancer is, what their chemo regimen is going to be. The ones that say after chemo would be maybe a week later or 2 weeks later when they come in for their next visit. And so the total visits that we had recorded here, there were 38 visits, 24 of them before chemo and 14 after. The number of visits in which side effects were discussed was all of them. And when we look at the length per visit of the amount of time that they spent talking about side effects, it was actually a pretty good proportion of the visit itself. So about 5 minutes on average that was spent talking about side effects out of an average visit length of about 15 minutes. So roughly a third. But you can see that the after chemo visits had a larger proportion of time that was spent talking about side effects. So what that seems like is happening is that there's some discussion beforehand, but there's more specific and longer detailed discussion in that second visit. And then the mean number of times discussed per visit was not different. It was discussed about 3 times. When we look more specifically about management of side effects, as well as things like the probabilities and other aspects related to things around decision making and management, so we can see that when you look at this, when it comes to management of side effects, although side effects themselves were talked about in every visit, the management was not. So there was not a difference between before and after chemo visits, but out of 38 total visits, 30 of them had management strategies discussed. If it was discussed, it was discussed on average 2 times. In terms of probability, again, the number of visits in which it was discussed, so out of 38 visits, out of 38 total visits, 19 of them had a probability discussed. So, and this can also be not just in numbers, but likelihoods. So a high likelihood or a low likelihood. And remember, these are all patients getting moderately to highly emetogenic regimen. So these are all patients that you would expect that this will happen to them. And you can see that it seems like that for those that are after chemo, that it's not discussed as frequently. In terms of the definition of chemotherapy, then when you think about what is chemo and what is this doing for you, that was discussed not terribly frequently. And physician inquiry into patient understanding, which is a particular interest of mine because a lot of what I do is related to shared decision making, again, the number of times that was discussed was out of 38 visits, it was 22. So, and this again can be something very minimal, like, are you following me? Do you understand? Do you have questions? Things like that. So we have a subset of patients for which we're calling it longitudinal data, but it's really where we have more than one visit for them. So we either have a nurse visit and a doctor visit, or we have both, where we have 2 doctor's visits. And so I just want to add, because one of the criticisms of studies like this is often, well, you only have this one visit, so you don't know if things were discussed at another time. Maybe the oncologist didn't do it, but maybe the nurse educator did. So for the patients, and that's a valid criticism, so for the patients where we have that data, all of the longitudinal patients we had were provided with information about side effects, including CINV. And in contrast to what I showed before, all of them were provided with at least some management strategies, including for those with CINV. And all of them were also had these processes and procedures and rationale for chemotherapy. So where we saw in some of that more detailed coding that it didn't always occur, if we captured several visits for people, then if it didn't occur in the first one, then it might have occurred in the second, or if it didn't occur with the oncologist, then it did with the nurse educator. So that's actually really good news, because a lot of research that looks at patient-provider communication, for example, won't look at what the nurses are doing in the chemo education visits. However, when we look at this, not all of the longitudinal patients were provided with the definition of chemotherapy. So really, what is it? And about 18% of the patients didn't have any physician inquiry into patient understanding. And so for me, that's a red flag, because it's not a huge proportion, but it's a sizable enough proportion. And we also know that even when physicians ask, that doesn't always mean that patients feel comfortable at answering that question and saying that they don't understand. So, like I said before, I have a lot more data that I'm happy to talk to people about. But the summary of these results is that the side effects were discussed in all visits and represented a large percentage of the time in the post-chemo visits, as well as this fact that I said all the longitudinal patients were provided information on side effects, as well as management strategies, which we think is particularly important, because you need to know not just will this happen, but what to do in case it does. But not all of these visits and not all the patients had a definition of chemotherapy or some sort of an inquiry on patient understanding about the information. In terms of some of the limitations, there's always the concern about the Hawthorne effect, where because people know that they're being audio recorded, that perhaps they're on their best behavior. What I can say from the many studies I've done on patient-provider communication is if that's their best behavior, that's a little scary sometimes. And there have been plenty of studies that have really shown that that's not an issue. The clinicians are too busy doing what they do, really, to worry about the fact that they're being recorded, as well as generalizability. But we think that that the strengths of this study are that we know, and we also know from chart reviews, that these actually are patients who are getting these types of regimens. So we're not capturing people where these would not have been concerns. As well as we have some longitudinal data, which is relatively unusual in these types of studies, and that we weren't just doing this at one site, but that we had several clinics across the country, as well as having several different cancers represented. So we feel that even though it's a small study, the generalizability is not as much of a problem. I'd like to acknowledge, in addition to the authors listed here, a couple of our other collaborators. Funding for this project was provided originally by GlaxoSmithKline for this project specifically, but not under any particular research program of theirs, as well as some funding for our postdoctoral student from the National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research. Thank you.